You're listening to the Renzo Republic.
Classically Liberal, Episode 4.
You fed up with mainstream media and politics? Tired of being lied to? You've come to the right place. It's not liberal. It's not conservative. It's Classically Liberal. Classically Liberal with Matt Wells, a libertarian podcast. Here's Matt.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to Classically Liberal for this fourth episode. My name is Matt Wells. I'm your host. Really appreciate you taking the time to listen. I know there's a lot of podcasts out there about liberty, so the fact that you're listening to this one means a lot. I am talking today to Rimzo W. Martinez of the podcast The Rimzo Republic. Rimzo is a young man, but he's an extremely motivated and informed young man, which I find to be inspiring, and I know you will too. Rimzo is so motivated, in fact, that he took time out of his busy schedule at the CPAC to talk to me. And so the audio quality of this interview won't be quite as good as I normally strive for, but I definitely think that you'll be able to forget all about that once we get into this conversation, because we talk about a wide breadth of topics. We talk about how he's making a business out of being a libertarian with his podcast, The Rimzo Republic. And also, we delve into how religion and Christianity have shaped his views from being a regular old conservative to being a full-bore libertarian out there fighting the good fight. So I hope you enjoy this conversation. Make sure to check out the show notes page over at classicallyliberalpodcast.com/04. And here we go. My guest this week is a libertarian activist. He is the host of a podcast called The Rimzo Republic that I think is an awesome show. And he is currently coming to us live on the ground from the Conservative Political Action Conference, popularly known as CPAC, up there in Maryland. And my guest is Rimzo W. Martinez. Rimzo, welcome to Classically Liberal.
Matt, thank you so much for having me on, man. It's such a blast to be on your program today.
Thanks so much for coming on. Rimzo, tell us more about your progression towards libertarianism. So, I mean, you're at CPAC. Did you once consider yourself a conservative? Have you ever considered yourself that?
And a long time ago, far, far away. In fact, you know, I came here specifically to cover the event because what we've seen over the past 3 to 4 years is a strange progression. At one point, we saw after 2012, the Republicans going towards this more liberty-minded direction. We saw this with the elections of Ted Cruz and Rand Paul and Mike Lee and Justin Amash and so many other people like that in the federal government. But slowly what we've seen is we've started to see a divide. We've seen the alt-right resurgence come in. We've seen more of these establishment conservatives pop up who are typically more tied to the Republican Party. And what I see a lack of today are a lot of liberty-minded organizations. I mean, I'm seeing a lot of fair trade booths. I'm seeing a lot of build the wall groups. And I came here to cover that. But to get to the main point of your question, yes, at one point I did consider myself a pretty staunch conservative. I am, you know, a recent Republican convert, but that does not make me any less libertarian because of that.
No, I don't
see,
think
back
it does.
In 2012, I considered myself. Yeah, I mean, back in 2012, I considered myself Mitt Romney's worst volunteer because I was still in high school at the time. I knew I did not want Barack Obama to be president again. So I signed up to be a volunteer for Mitt Romney's campaign, and before I could hit on one door, make one phone call, or give out one button or sticker, I just realized, you know, there's just something about this current Republican Party that's just not jiving with me. I'm not really digging it. So the election comes and goes. I'm not really surprised by what happened with the loss of Mitt Romney. So I go to this new organization that one of my teachers at my school was starting. It was a young conservatives club. I ran for president because I'm like, you know, let's talk about fair trade. Let's talk about individual liberty. The idea that if you don't break my back or pick my pocket, we should be friends and we should coexist. And if you don't like me, that's fine. I have my spot. You have your spot. And we could live and be peaceful together and be prosperous in the market where we could profit from each other. I mean, that's how you promote peace and prosperity. But I ended up losing to a guy who was the secretary for the school Democrats at the time, because everyone was just like, yeah, you know, that stuff is nice, but that stuff doesn't win. That stuff is not applicable to our current political climate. And at that point, I was so disillusioned. I was like, what the hell is going on? So I did what any lost teenager does. I took my ideas down and I Googled them. And next thing you know, I come up with all these names such as Ludwig von Mises and Friedrich von Hayek and Karl Menger and Milton Friedman. And I'm like, who are all these Austrian dudes? And that was just a rabbit hole that led me into everything else. And in about a year, I was a full-on libertarian. Over the last couple of years, I've gotten to work with organizations such as FreedomWorks, a media research center. I've worked on several campaigns ranging from libertarian to independent to just my most recent, which was for now Congressman Tom Garrett out in the 5th District of Virginia, my home. And with that, you know, I understood that there was this one principle, the fact that I was never necessarily interested in politics, but government takes an interest in your life, and I like to be free. I don't like asking for permission. I don't like begging for someone's blessing to go. Doesn't involve anyone else. If people want to voluntarily cooperate in the market, they should be able to do so. So it's not necessarily that I'm a giant political nerd. It's the fact that I want to live freer. I want to live in a world where I can pursue my ambitions and my dreams. And that's what I'm doing with the Rems of Republic. I'm just trying to convince people that, you know, you don't necessarily have to be a full-on conservative. You don't necessarily have to be a full-on libertarian. I'm trying to make less status in the world, because if we could do that, man, think of the possibilities out there for us as a country. We're the most prosperous, most generous, greatest country in the world. And if we just gave freedom a chance for once, think what we could do together.
Wow, that's awesome. So you're more of a more recent libertarian convert than
since about 2013. I got a scholarship to I got a Bastiat scholarship from the Cato Institute to go there, 2014 Cato University out in California. And right there, I got to hang out with guys such as Randy Barnett from Georgetown Law. There was Dr. Tom Palmer and so many other of these fantastic libertarian thinkers and movers and shakers. And at that point, I understood, you know, what we're dealing with, as I think it was Matt Drudge stated it quite wisely, we're not dealing with left versus right or conservative versus liberal. We're dealing with libertarian versus authoritarian, liberty versus tyranny, and that's where it comes down.
Yes, liberty and tyranny is the real political spectrum, not the left versus right. What brand of authoritarianism do you prefer? What brand of statism do you prefer? It is how much statism do you need, or if you need any at all? Well, that's awesome. I love how you sum that up. Your show, The Remzo Republic, which is available on pretty much every major podcast platform, is subtitled The Clash of Punk Rock and Politics. Tell us a little more about that and how the two intersect.
Man, the two intersect because they're two polar opposites. And that's what I saw kind of early on. You know, a lot of people, when they try and describe libertarianism, they go with the flat and boring Gary Johnson approach of we're fiscally liberal and we're socially conservative. Well, when you condense them down to their true meanings, those two are very conflicting things. So I'm like, I need to be able to draw people in that way while at the same time not diluting the definitions. And in terms of punk rock, you know, I was listening to grunge, and I was listening to the Misfits and everyone else in high school when everyone was on the Bieber fever train at that point. And in terms of politics, you know, we're trying to get the culture to actually get involved with what's going on at their local, state, and federal level. So it's this punk rock mentality of going against the grain, being the counterculture, saying what no one else thinks you could say, saying things that most people don't think are appropriate, and getting out there and actually getting involved. It's saying the blasphemous things that no one wants to say, that trade is good when, you know, goods cross borders instead of soldiers. It's this idea that if you own something, if you put something in the ground, you should be able to take it out and not give it to anyone else. So it's these classical liberal virtues of free trade, tolerance, and the idea that, you know, freedom will inconvenience people if they don't want to take full advantage of it. That's the punk rock mentality.
So it's kind of like saying whenever you have a mass of people, whether it's a cultural enforcement or actual authoritarian statist enforcement of things like free speech or other issues, just saying, you know, no, fuck you. We're free people. We are free people, and we're going to say what needs to be said, whether it's popular or not. I dig that.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. And the biggest thing is, you know, you look at punk rock from the historical perspective. It was Democrats in the 40s and 50s in California that tried to ban rock and roll permanently.
Mm-hmm.
And then you flash forward to the 70s and you have evangelical conservatives that are burning Beatles records. So you don't necessarily have to be Marilyn Manson to be, you know, going against the grain. But it's this idea that, you know, we're going to do what's fun. We're going to do what people want. And, you know, we just want to have fun and rock and roll. That's the only thing we want to do. Why should we have to ask permission? Why should we have to lower our music? Why should we have to censor our lyrics? It's that whole mentality. Let me be free. Let me give the people what they want. And as long as I don't break your back or pick your pocket, what difference does it make?
Right on, man. And that's really what it's all about. I mean, that's pretty much, you know, don't hurt people and don't take their stuff. You know, that's the classical liberal approach to pretty much everything, dumbed down as far as it can go. I love it. Now, what I also think is interesting, listen, you know, because I've been listening to your show, and I think that what I've noticed is that you're a practicing Christian. You go to Liberty University, which is a Christian university. It's actually considered the most conservative campus in America now.
Yeah, but we have a bowling alley, which makes us the coolest campus in America.
Oh.
So I just want to state the record.
I love bowling too. But, you know, you're a practicing Christian, but you also have this punk rock philosophy with libertarianism. So how does your Christianity intersect in your overall political views?
You know, a lot of people, they try and separate their politics from their faith. But when you're an actual practicing Christian, and I'm a Methodist and I was raised Catholic, what you begin to understand real fast is that if you have a biblical worldview, if you understand that you have a creator that wants a relationship with you and that all life matters and that each person is sanctified with natural rights to live free as long as they have civil liberty and cooperation and they're respectful to each other. I mean, that's just something that bleeds into your politics. I don't like people that say, oh, I keep my politics and my religion separate. No, because that's what the people who have changed history have never done. You look at William Wilberforce that helped fight slavery in Europe. You look at Dr. Livingston and all these other phenomenal people throughout history. You look at Frederick Douglass. You look at the founding fathers. They did not separate their politics from their religion. And people look at those, you know, such as the anti-federalists at the times. They were more deists. They were more, you know, rationalist thinkers at the time. But they still operated in this concept that we live in a world which has a creator and that there are some things that are absolute. There is such a thing as an absolute truth. So I don't necessarily see a problem with having my libertarian philosophy go and coincide with my Christian beliefs, because you look at the Christian just war ethic. Well, obviously, you look at a non-interventionist foreign policy, and that's good. You look at just war theory, and you understand when you need to be violent on someone else. I'm not anti-war. I'm, in fact, you know, I'm pro-peace. So we have to understand the divide at times. And then it just goes with everything else, whether it's sound money, whether it's the idea of having a constitutionally based republic, whether it's this idea that we need to have private property rights. My faith talks so much about that. That's the basis of classical liberalism. Classical liberalism at its core is founded in the biblical worldview. And I think a lot of scholars, you know, libertarianism has this problem. There's a giant sect of intellectual elitism that wants to drive out the biblical principles. And I mean, I've just never had that problem. So that's just, you know, that's just my neck of the woods right there.
Yeah, I've never really been a religious person. I consider myself more of a deist. I consider my spirituality complicated, but also pretty simple. But I do favor the idea of a secular government. But I do think that it's also important that that secular government recognize the validity of higher powers as people interpret them, because, you know, the fact that it says "In God we trust" on our money and above our court bars, things like that. While, you know, there is, I do understand the criticisms of that. To me, though, is better than it saying "in government we trust," because government is something that is subjective. Whereas when somebody's doing something for religious purposes, that's, you know, a tradition and rite or sacrament or whatever, then, you know, that needs to be respective, in my opinion.
You know, Matt, you just reminded me. I've got this really cool story, if you want me to tell it to you real fast. And it adds to the point that you're bringing up, but I also have this counter argument that I kind of want to throw at you to see how things go.
Yeah, go for it.
So you bring up the fact that you understand that you think that we need to have a secular government while at the same time respecting the freedom of conscience of others.
That's if any government at all.
See that. You're right. And, you know, the thing is, and we have a lot of listeners probably today that think, yes, we need a secular government that respects that, whether you're an atheist, a deist, a Christian, a Muslim, a Jew, a Hindu, or whatever. You want to start the Church of the Dude from the Big Lebowski? Go for it. But the problem is, wherever you've had a staunchly secular government, well, that's led to one thing. You know, communist Russia was a completely rationalist secular government. And we all see how that turned out. And you see that happening in other nations, which are truly trying to push this rationalist, materialist, morally relative agenda that says we are secular. I mean, look at France with the burqa ban and everything else. Look at England, which is slowly, slowly drifting so far away from its Christian foundation, in a way. You know, here's the thing. Not all religions are the same. And I get a lot of flack from that. I'm not saying that we need to differentiate on religions. We need to discriminate on religion. I'm not saying that at all. But what I am saying is that where you have had a Christian nation, especially when you look post-Reformation, post-Protestant Reformation, where the classical liberal ideas that we have today, and you can go look at David Bowe's book, The Libertarian Mind. It talks all about this. And I don't even know if he's a Christian or not, but it doesn't matter. Wherever you've had a Christian society that held these biblical values above all things, but at the same time respected the freedom of conscience of others, that's what makes our country what it is. That's what allows people of so many different cultures, faiths, races to come to the United States, because we understand that, you know, all people are created by the same creator that loves them, has a relationship with them, and that they need to cooperate and be prosperous and be peaceful amongst each other. You don't find this in Muslim nations. You don't even find this in extremely secular nations. You only find this in Christian nations. And the United States of America is the only one that has, for the most part, been extremely successful at that. Have we had pitfalls? Yes. But unlike most countries, we've done remarkably better when you look at the course of history of how we got here now. So that's just my spew. And then the short story real fast, I know I kind of pivoted. I have a professor at Liberty University. She's one of the founders of the Helms School of Government there. And she was a missionary in her teens. And she actually went to Russia, not as a missionary, but as a grad student. And she went to this museum in Moscow. And basically, it talked all about Russian history. And there was this giant, like, monument to Karl Marx. And at the monument, you had a globe, which was sitting on top of Charles Darwin's theory of evolution, and then underneath it was the Communist Manifesto. You see, that is at its heart the rationalist, materialist, postmodern, secular worldview. It's based off survival of the fittest, we are nothing, and it's based off these collectivist ideas that do nothing but kill, maim, and rape civilizations.
Something to think about. I want to shift gears myself here for a second.
Think about.
Your show, The Rimzo Republic, also features an ongoing series called Homeless History. Now, at first, I was like, what does the homeless have to do with history? Is this going to be a history of homelessness in America? But it's actually homeless in the sense of forgotten history, history that doesn't have a home in modern textbooks or in modern zeitgeist. I love alternative history. Which is because what's really, once you learn about it, you learn that it's actual history. The alternative history is this ridiculous, watered down, selectively revealed history that modern textbooks and also historical novels present. Tell us a little bit about that part of your show and you know, why you like to focus on that homeless history, as you call it.
Yeah, definitely, Matt. And I'm sorry to burst your bubble, but we actually had to cancel that series.
Oh, no.
Recently. Yeah, it's been canceled for a few months. But, you know, I do want to take a chance to talk about it, because what we have are some fantastic episodes that you can still listen to. And if you want to listen to them all in one sitting, you can go to remsorepublic.com/homeless history and you can listen to them. And I'm not the only host. I have other experts in their fields. I have my friend Logan Albright, which from Free the People, who did the history of the mental health movement in the United States. And that's terrifying. If you don't know the history of the mental health movement, then you're left in the dark when it comes to things such as childcare, education, parental rights, just how we view each other. I mean, it's phenomenal. And then you have Josh Withrow that talked about the Lost Amendment, which I had no clue about until he sent me his recording. And then you have Chloe and Agnos, who writes for my site, who discussed the legacy of FDR, and I covered several other topics. But the thing is, when we look at the way that history is taught predominantly in our public schools, and I was public schooled, homeschooled, and private schooled. I was a military kid, so I moved around every year. When you look at the way that history is taught to us from, you know, pre-K onward, even through most colleges, it is constructed from a Marxist worldview. And most professors, what's absolutely insane is that most required reading for undergraduate students today in their history courses, one of the books you'll find on there is Howard Zinn's A People's History of the United States. Howard Zinn was neither a historian or even just a real person that was an authority on any issue of culture, sociology, or history. He was a Marxist who was part of the Communist Party of the United States who wanted to rewrite history from the worldview of Marx. Karl Marx is the one that really justified the Marxist worldview, as in it's always the people's struggle and the, you know, the struggle of the labor against the bourgeois, the capitalists. And, you know, capitalism, for the most part, it even has a bad rep because it poses an emphasis on profit. You absolutize profit. Capitalists don't absolutize profit. Capitalists absolutize relationships, two people coming together and having a mutually beneficial relationship so they both get what they want. That's what free enterprise and markets are all about. So with homeless history for years, and it took me reading Tom Woods and so many other people, it took me so long to understand that the way that we see history has a specific worldview. Most of the time, it's a secular materialist worldview written by the Marxists. So you go back, and there are things that even most right-wingers don't want you to talk about. They don't want to talk about the Republicans that almost took out Abraham Lincoln electoral-wise because he was increasing federal power. He was breaking the writ of habeas corpus and the Constitution, and he was just doing things that no one wanted. People don't realize that Abraham Lincoln wanted nothing more than to not free the slaves. And that's why you have John C. Fremont, who's on the album cover for my show. He's the guy with the beard holding the flag. He was the very first Republican ever run for president. And during the Civil War, he was a general. He marched into Missouri, and upon taking it from the Confederates, he freed the slaves. And within a matter of days, and you have to remember, this is when people were still traveling on horseback, within a matter of days, news got from Missouri to Washington, where Lincoln was. And Lincoln said, Fremont, you're out of action. And by the way, we are not freeing the slaves. We're giving them back to their owners. Republicans don't know about that in their own party. In the history of the Republican Party, I might go about and do my own thing where I live stream some of these topics, but that's absolutely insane. And then you have people during the summer of 2016 who were saying, oh, Hillary's breaking glass ceilings and all this other stuff. What people don't know, and, you know, people think that it started with Sarah Palin and it goes back to Mondale Ferraro or whatever her name is. There was a person that there was a woman who was a Jew who was, well, I'll just say a woman, but she was not part of either major parties that won electoral vote. And she ran as a libertarian. I'd love to talk about this topic more, but go ahead and check out Homeless History Online and check out that episode. Oh, that's her name. Toni Nathan. Toni Nathan was the first woman and the first Jewish person in the United States to ever win an electoral vote in a presidential election. And we don't talk about that in political science courses. We don't talk about that in the history of the United States. Why? Because what it does is it goes against the winners. The winners are the people that get to rewrite history. And I called it homeless history, and you hit it earlier. It's the fact that there are just topics that just have disappeared. The information's out there, but it doesn't have a home. No one wants to pick it up. No one wants to write about this stuff. It's controversial.
So yeah, you can look at the Federal Reserve.
I'd like to bring it back one.
Yeah, you can look at the Federal Reserve as
a monster from Jekyll Island. Yeah.
Yeah, the creature from Jekyll Island. It's G. Edward Griffin. I mean, you look at the history of the Federal Reserve and how it was created. I would consider that homeless history. It's nothing but backroom deals and intrigue with, you know, secretive meetings and things. The literal smoke filled room type scenario that people joke about. That's how it came together. Then they lied about it. They said that they were against it. The people who actually wrote the bill, it's crazy. Oh, well, that's awesome. I hope you do bring that back. I want to know what your breaking point was. What was it that made you get involved, that made you start your podcast and say, I can't be silent, I can't be still. I need to go out and I need to try to affect change and make my voice heard, put myself out there. Because there's some risk involved in doing that. So what was your breaking point?
My breaking point came in around, I think it was February of 2015, around the time of the final GOP primaries, especially state level. And I had friends that were libertarians, I had friends that were Republicans, but mainly this one that really stuck out to me was one of my closest friends, Becky Garrison. She was the president of the Wetumpka Tea Party that several years back went before a congressional committee and regarding the IRS targeting of Tea Party and conservative organizations. And she went on, you know, she went in front of the panel and said, I'm neither a surfer or vassal. I'm a born free American woman. And I'm coming to you to say that you have not done your job and you have transgressed on your authority to abuse the American people. And as she was primarying, you know, I call her anti-subsidy, Martha Roby, this congresswoman that she was primary against in Alabama, it got to the point where it's like, you know, the media hates her because she's not, you know, this person that's going to bring back all this money and all this pork spending and all this other stuff back to the state. She's a person that actually wants to limit federal power and throw power back, not just to the states, but to the individual. Why isn't she catching on? She had a phenomenal grassroots movement, but it just wasn't going where it needed to go. And I've seen this so often with campaigns. You know, if a good idea is good, it should be able to sell itself, but it can only do so when people hear you. And it got to the point where I was like, you know what? The media has failed us. I know that if I put my mind to it, and I got to thank my producer, Ryan. I say that he does 90% of the work and I just talk. He's the producer for my show. I wanted to give people alternative media that seemed professional, a type of professionalism that you don't necessarily see in more libertarian circles. And I wanted to have these ideas sell themselves because we have amazing messengers in the liberty movement, conservative and libertarian alike. We have amazing messengers that do that. But it's whether or not they're heard, and it's whether or not they're heard and they're taken seriously. And then when they're taken seriously, what do you want? You want a call to action to turn thought into reality. In reality, you want to see the results that benefit everyone. And those are the ideas of freedom. And that's when I was like, you know what? I don't trust anyone else to do this. I know what I can do based off my records of success here and there. And it got to the point where it was like, I have to do this. I felt like I was called to do this show, and I don't know how long it's going to keep going. Hopefully forever. Hopefully we'll keep growing. But as long as I just keep doing what I'm doing, it's all about speaking truth to power. And it goes back to our original topic. It's, you know, I have a biblical worldview. I believe that God calls us to do certain things. And whether this is where I'm supposed to go or I'm waiting for something else or my time's going to dissipate and I'm going to have to fall back, we have to understand the points where action has to be taken. And we have a lot of useless, good-intentioned people. We have a lot of useless, good-intentioned people. And I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed, but I'm the person that turns thought into action. And at that point, I understood that if I want to change not just politics, but I want to change culture in America, you've got to speak directly to the zeitgeist. You got to speak to your Bernie bro. You got to speak to your gun-toting mom in Alabama. You've got to talk to your John Kasich conservative in Ohio. You've got to talk to your blue-collar worker in Kentucky. You've got to talk to that person that says, I think I'm being lied to, and I think what I've been fed is full of crap, and I want the truth, and I want ideas that no one else is talking about, because people crave authenticity, and I hope I give it to them.
Awesome. All right, Remzo, it's time to play the topics game. It's a game that I haven't come up with a name with yet. I guess if anybody wants to give me some ideas for a name, they can go to classicallyliberal.com/Facebook and leave some suggestions on the wall. Basically, I put some topics in a hat. They're libertarian oriented, just general zeitgeist oriented, as you were talking about zeitgeist there. Topics, I want to see what you think of them. And for the listeners at home, Remzo doesn't know what we're going to ask. So here we go. Topic one, jury nullification.
Everyone should know about it. Everyone should preach it. If we had that known by the masses, we'd have a lot less people in jail for stupid things that they shouldn't be convicted for.
Awesome. Yes, it's for those who may not know, you have the right to vote not guilty on anything, regardless of the evidence of the supposed victimless crime. No victim, no crime. If somebody's getting busted or being tried for something that is a victimless crime, you have the right and I believe the responsibility to vote your conscience based on whether or not you believe that law to be just. And in my estimation, if there is no victim, there is no crime. And you have the right to vote your conscience and say no. Now, you may not be able to persuade the rest of your jurors, but at the very least, you could end up with a hung jury, which I believe would either, I don't know, I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know what would happen from there, but it's very inconvenient for the courts, and it's very good for advancing the cause of freedom to let the government know that we will not be tolerating unjust actions. Cable news, topic two.
It's absolute crap. I stopped watching it a while ago, which is why people need to tune into the Remso Republic.
I don't understand.
I do like Red Eye. I do like Red Eye on Fox. If you know, I started watching it in high school with Greg Gutfeld, and I like watching Red Eye of Tom Shalhoub. So Red Eye is probably the only show that's part of a cable news network that I like.
Is that
so
Kennedy's?
Shout out to Red Eye.
Is that Kennedy's show? Is that Kennedy's show?
No, that's just called Kennedy.
Oh,
which
okay.
Is nice. But, you know, I like to engage people. I like to have a roundtable discussion, you know, joke about it. We can talk. We can have fun and talk about politics while not always talking about politics in order to have fun. And I think Red Eye does that. I like Kennedy, but I liked her when she was on The Independents, which had Matt Welch from Reason. And, I mean, that was fun. On her own, she's still good, but I am not necessarily turning to her as often because when I watch TV, you know, I want to be entertained. But I also understand that my time is limited and extremely valuable, so I might as well get the biggest bang for my buck. And I think Red Eye with Tom Shalhoub on Fox is probably my favorite cable news network show.
I've never even seen it. You know, I cut the cord years ago and haven't had cable in quite a while. Sometimes I catch...
They do a podcast. Yeah, I'm sorry. They do a podcast where you can get like the best of the show, and they're like 5 to 10 minutes long. Honestly, you could watch that and you might as well not watch the entire show. So it's free and it's there and it's fun.
Yeah. Well, you know, the majority of their exposure is actually now through their online publications where they post news like CNN.com, FoxNews.com, MSNBC.com, whatever it is. Their ratings on television are actually abysmal and constantly dropping. But the news that comes out
of... Hey,
it's
great news for us, though.
That is great news for us. But I don't see how people even give them any credibility at all and how there's this outrage whenever they get called out for being fake news themselves while they try to label anyone who's not them fake news. So they failed. I agree. Listen to the Remso Republic and Classically Liberal and all the great alternative media sources out there bringing you the message of liberty. All right. Topic three, patriotism. I think that this is something that is not a settled issue in the libertarian community. What's your take on it?
Patriotism means that your responsibility is to the foundation which your countries were founded on, and that it does not mean straight, loyal, you know, cult-like worship of a single individual or a single organization. Patriotism means saying the unpopular decisions when they need to be said, making the right stand when someone needs to stand, and ultimately speaking truth to power if you love yourself and your community.
Yeah, I think that's a great way of putting it, you know, because the patriotism from a libertarian perspective is that, in my estimation, that I feel is to the founding principles of the country. And, you know, there's a lot
our
of libertarians,
liberal principles.
Exactly, which are that's so true. And I was talking to Johnny Adams the other day for episode two of Classically Liberal. And he was, you know, talking about how I was bringing up how the Bill of Rights is really the most important part of the Constitution, because there's an argument in the libertarian community that the Constitution has either empowered the government to become what it has, the federal government, or prevented it from doing so. And there's some validity to that, but either way, it's saying that it's a failure. But I don't think that it is a total failure, because the Bill of Rights does enshrine certain amounts, certain freedoms to the individual that are not really protected in such concrete wording and cultural and such a cultural institution with a solid historical foundation such as that or such as those that are protected by the Bill of Rights. So that's where my patriotism really lies. Now, as far as owing allegiance to, like you said, an organization or an individual or blind following, Exactly. I kind of look at it as an old-fashioned form of patriotism versus this newfangled patriotism, where this modern patriotism is seeing the government, the federal government, as the all-encompassing great, as being America itself, which it is not. In fact, if anything, it's detrimental to the bedrock of the nation, which is individual responsibility, economic freedom, personal choice, self-ownership, classically liberal principles. So, give me that good old-fashioned patriotism is what I say. And finally, what is your this was one that I randomly chose that I think is an interesting topic. The gig economy. What do you think about the gig economy?
The gig economy is the future of innovation. When you look at disruptive technologies, when you look at app-based services, when you look at this contractor type of complex, as someone called it, I like that term. What we see are people that are opting out of this lie that if you go and get a corporate job or you go and get a nice, comfy desk job somewhere and you stay there for 20, 30 years and you invest in your 401k, you're safe. But as my friend Jim Harold says, you know, the idea of safety is false, because we saw this in the 2008 market crash. We've seen this in the Great Depression. It's all throughout history. The idea that there are such things as safe jobs are fake. And what I loved is that Bernie Sanders at a town hall with CNN a while back, and you had this girl named Tanya who worked at a vehicle manufacturing plant. What she said was, hey, my father worked here for 25 years. I've been working here for 15 years. I'm afraid that if we keep going the way they are, I'm going to lose my job to a Mexican. So please, Bernie, how will you protect my job? And I'm watching this, and I have it on DVR, so I paused it, and I looked at my brother, who's the producer for my show, and I said, Ryan, do you see Tanya? Tanya is stupid. Because the gig economy is this. You invest in your human capital. You take the jobs that not many people want to do. I mean, think about Uber. Think of what that has done to everything. I mean, not just taxi unions with their scandalous medallion system, which is full of crap, but think about it. Uber's nothing innovative. All it is you should be able to call a taxi from an app on your phone. That's nothing. But at the same time, the fact that now that's possible, that is insane. And what that has done is create things like Airbnb and so many other things. You know, I like Fiverr, because when I need someone to do a video or someone to do graphic design and stuff, there are people that are saying, hey, I might do this full time, I might do this part time, but I'm good at something. I like doing it and I can make money off of it. When you give people the ability to freely make money off the things that they need to do or the things that they really want to do, it's phenomenal. And, you know, even doing a podcast like what I'm doing, you know, I have sponsors, I have donors, I have, you know, I don't do this for free, folks. I have to make money from it somehow, or else producer Ryan would create a union of one and then I'm screwed. I'll be boss tweet at that moment. You got to be able to make money off of things. You know, money is good. Money is freedom. And the gig economy is showing people that no matter where you are, who you are, whether you're in the inner city or whether you're out in the country, thanks to the internet and this idea that disruptive technologies can free you of, you know, government regulation and red tape and everything else, it's phenomenal, it's beautiful, and we need to understand that that's part of the future.
Well said. Rimzo W. Martinez, thank you so much for coming on Classically Liberal this week. Go check out his show, The Rimzo Republic, available on iTunes and every major platform. Rimzo, final opportunity for you to pitch, plug, or wrap it up.
Well, you know, you guys can follow me like today. You know, by the time you listen to this, I won't be at CPAC, but if you want to see everything that I saw while I was down here covering some events with my friends, follow me on Twitter at Remso101. And, you know, producer Ryan can use some more followers, so follow him at Liberty Producer. And if you want to find more platforms, and we're on a couple networks, go ahead and go to RemsoRepublic.com. That's R-E-M-S-O, Romeo, Echo, Mike, Sierra, Oscar, Republic.com. And just find me on Facebook at Remso W. Martins. Have fun. And, you know, Matt, thank you so much for welcoming me on the premiere season of your show. I wish you best of luck. You're in my prayers. And, you know, I hope you can continue to have fun with this.
Well, thanks very much, Rimzo. All right, folks, that's going to wrap it up for this week. Take it easy. All right, well, that's going to wrap it up for this week. Thanks again to Rimzo W. Martinez from the RimzoRepublic.com for taking time out of his busy schedule over at CPAC to join me and talk about freedom. I want to thank you as well for taking the time to download and listen to this podcast. If you like it, why don't you go to the description page and click on the link to go to iTunes, and leave a 5-star rating and review for this show. It really, really helps get the podcast in front of more people's eyes, and that makes it more likely that they're going to put the podcast in their ears. And isn't that what it's all about? And spreading the message of liberty and freedom. All right. Well, thanks again very much. And I want you to remember, if you start to get into a heated argument with a conservative or with a progressive liberal, just take a moment to say, hey, what would Matt Wells do? Well, he'd keep it classy.
Thanks so much for listening to Classically Liberal with Matt Wells, a libertarian podcast, online at classicallyliberalpodcast.com. We'll catch you next time.
Stay up to date with the latest news and updates by visiting
RemzoRepublic.com.